Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to the fall edition of the TV Dudes,
Dudes podcast. You keep saying it's fall.
The Roguecast.
Yes.
Dave put the TV Dudes in my head.
Right. So the people need to be explained what TV Dudes is.
I did a podcast called the TV Dudes for like 15 years, and I haven't done it recently. And we were talking about it before we started the podcast, and Dave said, you need an anxiety dream about TV Dudes. And apparently he incepted me to call this podcast the TV Dudes podcast.
It only took one sentence.
We're not even talking. I'm very suggestible.
I can incept people with while they're awake, first of all. By the way, this is my final week for my podcast, for Text Trek. So I'm wrapping up my run on that show with episode 300, inspired by your exit from TV.
We're all quitting podcasts.
Well, let's quit this one right now, right in the middle of it.
I only do one, so I guess I'm going to have to leave.
Do you mind taking Nick, you're taking over.
This is the only one I do.
Yeah,
I
Nick's going to quit the podcast.
Turn in your badge
going.
And your gun, Nick.
That's true. I guess I will have to do
I don't
that.
Know if people know, but we carry badges and firearms while we're doing this podcast.
Of course, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We do have some Nerf guns.
Mainly so we can quit dramatically.
One of my favorite gags in any kind of comedy show is when someone's fired or they're resigning, and they hand in a badge and a gun, and the guy's like, "We didn't give you those things."
That's very naked guns. Yes.
Yeah, I think there was probably something where some guy was maybe it'd be The Office, like he gave him his badge and his gun, and like we didn't give you those.
Sounds like a
we didn't know you were carrying
episode.
These in here. Anyway, what I was going to say though is this is the fall edition of the podcast because Dave, I think you'll agree, it is fall now.
It is fall. We already talked about it last week, but it's been raining.
Yep.
The temperatures have been hovering in the low 90s.
Yes.
In my southern lawyer mode, I already made the case last
week. You did,
and
I've been swayed. You incepted me there, too.
You know what else? You know what I had for dessert today?
Pumpkin.
I had a pumpkin white chocolate cookie.
It's a very fall dessert.
From Jimmy John's. That was pretty good, I have to say.
Yeah.
And so
fall for me won't start until Sunday. The low is 59.
Boo!
Wow!
Like
look at that! an actual cool front.
I don't want to be actually fall. I want to be Texas fall.
Don't worry, Randy. During the day, it's probably going to go up to 90 again.
Good. That's all.
It says 85.
Randy and Nick, I'm trying to give him his dreams.
85 is good. 85 is good.
Okay.
Just I don't want to be less than 70 during the day.
Those are great days.
No,
we will cherish those.
No, we live in Texas. It should be hot.
And that's when we go and get chili, though.
All right, that's fair.
It's almost time for Texas Chili Parlor.
It is time for our yearly excursion to Texas Chili Parlor.
Yeah, keep it in mind.
You know, we talk about nonsense now with this podcast, but last week, when we did our sports and weather, and we were all talking about nobody's listening, I believe it was Russell Sinclair who was like, that bet was gold.
That's right.
So we know our audience. And what they want to hear is us talking about utter nonsense.
Everybody loves the weather.
We could do this for a full hour.
Which is good, because we speak utter nonsense. But this is also a promotional podcast, so I guess we should talk about games.
Right, and just broad heads up, big comics week, lots of game stuff.
Yeah.
We're catching up on some things.
A big role-playing game.
Yeah.
Yes, let's talk about D&D Player's Handbook 2024.
Yes.
So it's the new Player's Handbook. It incorporates a lot of the stuff from Tasha's and Mordenkainen's and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And some changes. Basically, you could call it D&D 5.5, but they didn't call it that.
Right. But and nobody knows quite what to call it, but it's the new D&D book.
Yep.
And it has, like, all new artwork, new layout and stuff like that.
Yep.
I was talking to someone, and they were saying that this has one of the better layouts that he's seen. You know, there is a certain, like... Most D&D players' handbooks, I find that if you haven't already played D&D, it's like picking up the Necronomicon. You don't know what's what.
Or a physics textbook.
Or a physics textbook. You're just like, what?
Yeah.
It just like throws you into character creation, and you're like, I don't even know what a character is. I don't know what these numbers mean.
Right.
What's a role-playing game?
Right.
I gather they've done a better job of all of that stuff. It's actually bigger, I think, like more page
it is, and
count.
Still the same cost, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, we were, I think, expecting a price hike.
Yeah, but they didn't do it.
And
it is almost 500 pages for $50.
Yeah, not bad
good.
At all.
Yep.
And we get an early sales window to sell it. It's not officially out yet,
yep.
but retailers get early times.
And while they last, we've got a little what is it? What are you, inspiration tokens.
You get, when you buy it, you get four little wooden inspiration tokens that have our store. It's got some art and then our store name on it.
Yep. Yeah, pretty cool.
We got those from Foambrain, who do a lot of our dice, made our Owlbear coins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be big. It will be our new standard for the player's handbook, although right. it is backwards compatible with whatever 5e stuff you've already been playing for right. like the last 10 years. It is the new state of the art, and that's basically going to be the new edition.
We also got the Star Wars deck-building game Clone Wars expansion, which is a standalone game, but also an expansion. You can throw it in if you want to play more than two players with the deck builder.
That's pretty cool.
The Star Wars deck builder is a game I really like. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Star Realms. It's got a couple extra mechanics, like a force mechanic that I really like.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed it. I was looking for expansions. I'm glad they did this one. This is also, like I say, a standalone two-player game. You can get it and play the Republic versus the Separatists, but you can also get it and mix and match.
Now, can you play a Jar Jar card on your opponent?
I'm sure there's a Jar Jar card in
there. Yeah, he's right there. He's on the back. Jar Jar.
Does it do something? Jar Jar. Because it, like, shouldn't help you. It should hinder your opponent.
Yes. Yes.
No, he should, like, do something, but he always ends up doing something good.
I guess so.
He's kind of a...
It's almost like...
Dopey.
It's like if you discard a card or something like that, or two cards, you should get some cool effect.
Yeah.
Like he's hindered you a little bit, but...
All right. It looks like you fight... Like,
we've given you the game design, people. Now get to work. Oh, wait, it's already out.
It's already out.
You fight Grievous, all, like, super battle droids, the Droidica. Ahsoka's in here.
And when we were talking about D&D, did we mention we had the alternate cover?
No.
We have the alternate cover, which is very cool, and a lot of people want it.
Yes,
so,
it's true.
But you should move relatively quickly on that, because it could. Yep. It's when it sells out, it may be gone.
It may be. We also got a new Ticket to Ride map, Iberia and South Korea.
Yep.
This is the eighth map pack they've done. Those are always pretty popular.
Yep.
And an all-ages party game called Quick Draw, which I didn't get to just look too much at, but it sounds like
Pictionary-esque,
I think.
Type game, yeah.
There is a game we got called the Looney Oracle, and I just saw this and didn't get a chance to sort of look at it. But it is a fortune-telling toy that offers cryptic advice on the topic of your choice and answers any yes or no question.
So this is like a tongue-in-cheek Magic 8-Ball?
Yes, these are the people that make Flux.
Okay.
And that kind of thing. So it's in that sort of vein.
Yeah, they like kind of anarchic, goofy, fun games. Yeah.
So basically it's like you influence the answer by choosing among Oracle objects. So when asking for advice by your birthday, do you choose the bicycle, the universe, or dinosaurs? One of them advises, consider the mistakes you made last time. So yes, it's like a fortune cookie game.
That sounds fun. Why don't y'all buy it and let's play it?
All right. Yes,
right now. Stop the podcast.
Time. Stop the podcast. We quit. We quit the podcast and play games.
Now we only play goofy Oracle games.
We got the Pathfinder Qin Shui character guide, which is their sort of like
the Eastern Realms.
Yeah, Eastern Realms. Yeah. Yeah. They have Kitsune and some other sort of Japanese
that's
folklore
cool.
stuff.
That's
and
cool.
So a lot of those stuff came from there. Their realm is really well thought out.
I gotta flip through that later. I always like reading their world setting stuff.
Yeah. Well, and Pathfinder is not like the 80s D&D, which, while well meaning, was definitely bordering on racist.
Right, right.
This is more conscious of the different.
We would say sort of racially clumsy at best.
This is more in taking in the Korean cinema, Japanese cinema, Chinese cinema, all those things, and mixing and matching to make a sort of melting pot.
And if I had to guess, I bet there is input from people from those cultures.
Probably so. You don't think it was just a bunch of white dudes in beards?
Who'd like watched some Bruce Lee movies and some samurai movies?
I believe that might have been the Oriental Adventures.
They're like, I got the gist of it.
Yeah. Like swords and samurais, right? And ninjas?
Yeah.
Ninjas are cool. Anyway, yes.
Although I think, like, Karator, I think, was the...
It was better.
It had some good stuff in it.
It is a tradition of gaming that they've updated, so...
Yes.
Disney Villainous Introduction to Evil. This is a new, like, for new players, the Villainous...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know...
Is this like a child's first game of evil?
Yes.
What are we selling here?
I think that's what it is.
I thought D&D was supposed to be where the problems were.
A reissue of the original one, because this has Ursula.
Okay.
But I think it's just the newer edition of it.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Okay, maybe they updated a few things.
Yeah.
Ursula, Prince John, and Captain Hook, and Maleficent.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, it's just a new first evil game.
So lower your excitement level on that one, people.
We've got the Pokemon Holiday Calendar. This is
it's a big boxed Advent calendar set.
Yeah, Advent calendar. Yes, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's.
Do you get cards and just cards?
Packs and stuff.
Okay, packs.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I think it's like around $60 or a little bit more, but like has all the cool gifts in it. If you know a kid who likes Pokemon, this would be the coolest thing.
And there's an adorable piece of artwork that has all the Pokemon playing in the snow.
Yes, it's actually very delightful.
It is.
A game called Foundations of Metropolis, which is a city-building board game designed by the award-winning Emerson Matsuchi. I don't know who that is. I'm now looking up to see what games he has done.
Is this like a SimCity kind of thing?
So it's... It is three rounds of play. You compete to be the greatest architect in your city by purchasing deeds to empty lots and constructing your buildings on them.
Okay.
This is the same publisher that did World Wonders, the game I really liked.
Yep.
Oh, this is the guy who did the Century games, which everybody really likes.
Oh, Century Gauntlet.
He also did Foundations of Rome, which is a very well-liked big game. And Spectre Ops, which is a game I've heard of, too. So, yes, this is a famous...
Got a pedigree.
Yeah, so... good publisher, good designer. That's definitely one I want to check out.
What was the name again?
Foundations of Metropolis.
Okay.
Then we got a game called Adulthood, which kind of looks like The Game of Life.
Yep. Maybe a little more tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it has a designer's name on the front of it. It's by Brotherwise Games, the people who do Boss Monster.
Oh, okay.
Call to Adventure.
Yep.
Choose a career, seek out experiences, find a partner, and try to spend time on wellness while dealing with unexpected life events. Interesting. It's,
I hope it's got like, I pulled the homeowner's card, homeowner's association card.
It says it's designed by Johnny.
Use 10 hours to updating your lawn.
Oh, so that makes sense. This must be somewhere maybe in the house. He's the guy who's worked on Cult Adventure, Boss Monster.
Okay.
So this is his new thing. Those are both really good games. And then we got the new HeroClix, the Masters of Time, which includes the Jurassic League.
Yeah.
Right. That is the Justice League, where they were dinosaurs.
They were dinosaurs.
Yep.
But, like, if people don't know, not only is there, like, I believe there's a nice hardcover of that.
There's a soft cover, too.
It's written by Daniel Warren Johnson,
yep.
Who you may know from the current Transformers run, his Beta Ray Bill stuff.
Yep.
Do a power bomb. Very fun guy.
Yep.
And he imagined... What if Batman was like a Triceratops or something? But it is actually, you know, I've read a decent bit of it, and it's pretty fun. It is ridiculous and in a good way. And I believe it had some of the best puns, if memory serves.
It was good.
Like, their team names and their character names are just ridiculous.
Yeah. Nice artwork
in a good way.
Yes.
By Wong Gadam.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about the comics. This is a big week for comics.
Yep.
The next part of the X-Men relaunch, I think the last team book, really.
Yeah, maybe the last sort of big team one.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of solo books coming after this. Exceptional X-Men. This is the one that I think I wasn't sure on. Evel Ewing has not been as big of a writer that I've liked as much.
But if we were to sum it up, it's the Kitty Pryde and Emma Frost lead a team of kind of new mutants, young mutants. They're not literally new mutants.
Yeah. They are new mutants. We haven't seen them.
Well, they are, but it's not the new mutants brand
right. And
yellow and blue costumes.
But, I mean, Emma is in it a little bit, but this is mainly a focus on Kitty.
Oh, this first issue is all Kitty Pryde.
It is a very personal issue, kind of like NYX was.
Kitty's gone home, back to Chicago. She's working as a bartender, which is a callback to her Extreme X-Men days.
Yeah. Was the person she's living with anybody that we've seen before?
I didn't recognize her.
Because she definitely says she's a childhood friend.
She mentions being a childhood friend. I think she's invented, but I don't know all of Kitty's history, so...
Do we see the...
Yeah, she's in there. Her name is like Petrie, or no?
Yeah, I think that's...
Preety.
So I think she's new.
She's probably new.
I just thought that would have been a fun callback if it actually was something.
Yeah.
But
there's also, like, she's basically trying to live an X-Men-less life. She's trying to not use her powers, just live as a bartender, like live back in Chicago. I think she mentions talking to her mom.
Yep.
But she runs afoul of some anti-mutant forces, or sort of an anti-mutant prejudice that's directed at somebody else, and much as she wants to stay out of it, Kitty can't do that.
Yep. And, you know, that sounds very tropey, but I feel like it's actually handled in a pretty subtle and organic way.
It's done really well.
But more to the point, the kind of introspective Kitty Pryde stuff is, I think, particularly well written. It wasn't quite how, like, Kitty is usually written, I feel.
You know what? I've seen her...
But it's also, like, it does suit her.
I've seen her quit the X-Men several times. She's kind of like Spider-Man. Yeah. She's like, no more. She's definitely done it a few times.
She is, you know, Kitty is usually kind of fairly energetic sort of person, and here she is actually she's honestly dealing with a little bit of depression.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that they let that breathe a little bit in a pretty interesting way.
And she worked in a bar before, didn't
she? During Extreme X-Men. She had got tattoos and stuff.
I mentioned to y'all, I thought the artwork in this is really phenomenal.
The art is exceptional.
It's really good for the kind of character piece stuff in this first issue. And a great Emma Frost, by the way.
Yeah.
But like that, there's a big splash page of her, you know, kind of busting her ass in the bar, and she's tired, and there's messiness on the bar and drinks everywhere. And I was like, this is very realistic looking.
This is Carmen Carnero, who's been doing Captain America: Sentinel of Liberty. And I think did some Captain Marvel.
But it's like...
This is like her first big
Kitty's piece. Apartment feels very lived in. It feels very realistic. Mm-hmm.
The whole vibe of this... Dave, you mentioned this when we were talking about it off mic, that mm-hmm. there's almost a Ferris Bueller. She like literally talks to the camera a couple of times.
Right. But it's not like really campy.
No, it works. You told me about that and I was skeptical, but it really works.
Yeah. I was trying to say, it's almost more like, she's just like... It's almost like you're just walking along with her.
Yeah.
Like, you're just hanging out with her for a day, and she just starts telling you
this,
about stuff.
This is one of my favorite first issues they've done. Like, as much as I've liked all the X-Men, this has a shot at, like, being my favorite of the first issues of X-Men.
I appreciate little small details, like that artist had her Star of David, notably, mm-hmm. but also just all that art was great.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I was not expecting to like this as much as I did, but definitely worth a read.
All I want to know is, where's Lockheed?
She has a cat instead, right? Like a dog?
No, her roommate has a dog. Has a corgi.
I had the same thought, Nick. I was like, why is your dragon not here?
And she has an origami version of Lockheed on her shelf. Okay.
So what that means is that Lockheed is going to make some kind of surprise appearance.
I hope.
I'll be sad not to have Lockheed. But they may be trying to stay away from the sort of like, this is a person who has a dragon. She's a normal person.
She's wanting to do the normal life. She cannot be walking around New York with a dragon. Mutant hatred is at a peak right now. Yeah.
She's not in New York. She's in Chicago.
Chi-town.
Lockheed
can go to his room and think about what he's done and think about the mess he made in the danger room.
Maybe he can go back to this alien race that he belongs to.
I'm not going to tell him to go back to his race. Listen, I'm trying to exclude the little guy, but I'm not racist. but yes, I suspect that he's probably like staying with Peter or somebody like that, and
we don't know where Colossus is. He's not in any of the books. Yeah.
And although we see the inkling of like what's happening in this, it is clear that it'll probably be like next issue before we get some of the details on how this group will come together, and maybe Lockheed will go out on their adventures.
I'm assuming Lockheed is with Pete Wisdom right now.
No. I meant Peter, the good Peter.
No, good Peter, not the bad Peter.
Not the one that's Warren Ellis's Avatar character.
What happened to Pete Wisdom? Did he ever show back up?
Who knows?
Hopefully he's been canceled like Warren Ellis has.
All right.
Creepy Brit.
There's a Marvel Zombies Dawn of Decay in which a sort of plant zombie thing spins out of Groot.
Right, Groot gets a cold on an alien world, and he delivers it, unfortunately, to the Avengers.
Yep.
But he's immune himself because he's a weird tree man.
Dave, you correctly pinned this. It feels like this feels like it takes place in the MCU.
Yes.
Yes. There's a bit early on where Thor says some very bantery Chris Hemsworthy stuff to Groot, and I was like, that's what they're doing. But I think if you're looking for, it's not deep. It's not entrenched in the history of the Marvel zombie stuff. It's its own thing. And it almost feels like it could just be a what if the MCU had a Marvel Zombies incident that came from Groot.
This guy's it seems like he may be more of an animation writer.
Okay.
He's worked on Teenage Mutant Turtles, the 2012 version, The Fairly Odd Parents. He's the co-creator of Primer over at DC.
Okay.
So he brings something different to comics. So
I wonder if he's going to be involved in the Marvel Zombies animated series.
That would be my guess, and that's why he's doing this.
Makes some sense.
Yeah.
Maybe at one point that was supposed to be farther along, and this was going to tie into it.
That would be my guess, yeah. But anyway, it's interesting. It's just it feels like a little thing in a different universe.
Yep.
We've got Spider-Man Homeroom Heroes, which also, Nick, you said is going to be based on the new animated thing.
Yeah. Which looks cool.
It's an all-ages Spider-Man comic, and I would say it's, like, not as all-ages as, like as kiddy as those ones where he looked like a little chibi Funko Pop Spider-Man. Yep. This is very kid-friendly, but it's a little bit more realistic.
More akin to didn't they do one called, like, Spider-Man Freshman Year or something?
Yeah.
Not too long ago. Yep. I think it's more along those lines.
Oh, and this features Circe of the Eternals, Shocker, and She-Hulk.
Yep. You know, I honestly kind of like weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
And kids, sometimes it's fun, I think, for them to see lesser-known characters. Like, if he just teamed up with the Hulk, boring. Yes. I've seen the Hulk before.
Some kid's going to get this, and Cersei's going to become their favorite character, and then find out that Cersei's not in a lot.
That's quite possible, but you know what? Kids have to learn that lesson, too. You know what? I liked Wonder Man as a kid, and then later on I would be like, oh, he's nowhere.
It's true. It's true.
Except in approximately every 47 issues of Avengers.
We've also got Star Wars The Acolyte Kel Naka. This is the Wookiee Jedi from The Acolyte.
Yes.
And this is a original story. It is not an adaptation.
He had a rough day, I'm going to say, in the Acolyte series.
We didn't see a lot of him in the Acolyte, really.
But he also did get to kind of be a badass, but also kind of be mind-controlled, possibly.
Correct.
Anyway, this is a little sort of one-shot lost story, and I honestly didn't have really any expectations of it, but I kind of liked it. It's a sort of meditative, thoughtful story about a dying Jedi, and he and his story weaves into it, and he's like a Jedi who doesn't really talk. He's a kind of quiet Wookiee Jedi. And so you have to earn his trust with your actions, and he shows his friendship with his actions alone. He doesn't say,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He doesn't like talk to his Padawans and stuff much.
Nick, you want to talk about this Uncanny X-Men 274 facsimile edition?
I mean, I have a personal attachment to that issue because I got in trouble by my school elementary school principal for recreating the cover, which has a scantily clad Rogue in the Savage Land.
Savage Land Rogue.
And my art teacher stood by me and defended my ability to draw this.
Let's hear it for art teachers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, cool art teachers are cool.
I had a great art teacher in high school.
Yeah, but this was just a fun issue that has a little bit of Savage Land. I forget what all. I think Deathbird is shown in
the very last
Zaladane
page.
Is the big bad
right,
in it. Deathbird is only on the final page. Zaladane is like setting up these sort of constructs around the world that are messing with the magnetic field.
Yeah,
Magneto is first person narrating most of the issue.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's very much weighing all the bad things he's done, and he's like, oh, you know, is Zaladane a reflection of him? Is he better than that? Is he not better than that? Was there a little thing with Rogue, he thinks, at one point? And this would go on to be the basis for the bit on the X-Men 97, where there was definitely a thing.
It also had, what, Nick Fury, Kazar?
Yep,
Nick Fury, Kazar, and
this
Near the end, the rest of the X-Men, like, teleport in, and there's, like, it's everybody.
But the...
But most of the time, it's not.
The Savage Land Rogue is the famous... That's a famous design.
Yep.
They're also the Vintage Ads.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, man.
If you ever wanted to win a jet ski with a Silver Surfer on it, it's too late.
It looked like a fake jet ski.
I mean, the Jim Lee artwork in it is
it's pretty good. Yeah. Even if you're not the world's biggest Jim Lee fan, like I'm not.
Yep.
It's pretty solid.
Just like I am not.
It's like I am not. Second of the what if Donald Ducks, instead of becoming Wolverine, this is what if he became Thor?
I believe, like, the old-school Don Blake, who found the Hammer of Thor and it, like, turned him into Thor.
Yep.
I believe Donald finds it in the similar way.
He does.
Now, I feel like this is getting to a level of power that probably a duck with his short temper should not have. I'm not sure what kind of lesson we're learning here.
Well,
kids.
He does fight a giant alien robot. And it's okay to hit robots with hammers.
Sometimes. I guess.
Yeah, this looks fun. I guess they're going to do what if Minnie became Captain Marvel next?
Oh, that's
pretty good. That's fun.
Yeah.
These are fun.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like the Disney characters.
Yeah, for sure. We have a one-shot called The Trinity Special World's Finest. This reprints all of Tom King's stories featuring the children of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman with really nice art. Who is this artist? It says Ortega, but I don't know if that's actually...
I believe it's somewhat known that we're not... what you call fans of Tom King here.
No.
We are the anti-Tom King star.
Correct.
Except occasionally Nick.
That's true.
And
he can win me back sometimes and then piss me off the other side.
Yep. But the one thing that we always have to give it up for is that dude works with the best artists.
And I will say...
liberate yourself, artists.
Differentiating from a lot of his other stuff, this one looks like
this was like
very
a more
happy
fun one.
And more fun.
Yes, it's channeling the Super Sons vibe.
Yes.
By way of Tom King.
It does not look like there are any animals that get killed. In fact, there are beautiful. There are fun corgis throughout.
Maybe give it a closer read, Nick. You
I
don't
mean,
know.
It's possible. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but you know.
There is a new Black Label book called Plastic Man No More.
At long last, an R-rated Plastic Man book.
This is Christopher Cantwell, who's written a ton of comics at this point, but also did the Halt and Catch Fire TV show that a lot of people really liked. Pretty nice art by Alex Linz.
And I don't actually think it's not an R-rated one. I think it's just it's out of continuity. It does have some, I think, kind of darker elements in it. Yeah. I want to say possibly having to do with Plastic Man and his son, but there's also like some goofy stuff in it because Plastic Man.
I liked the artist who does the flashbacks too, like classic.
Yeah.
His name is Jacob
Edgar.
That stuff is very cool.
New book from Boom by Jeff Lemire called Minor Arcana. Dave, you've read this?
Yeah, I read it like a month ago, and I don't remember anything about it.
Did you read it?
I did not get a
chance.
There's
a young lady who is returning home to her small town roots. I think finances are crashing down, and she has to, reconnect a little bit with her mother, who's kind of or at least from her daughter's eyes, a charlatan tarot card reader.
Okay.
But it's, and there's a lot of that kind of Jeff Lemire small town realness in this, you know, he's lived the life. And the characters are not always painted flatteringly, on either side.
I think you said earlier, he's got a little bit of like Stephen King in him.
And I feel like the same way King writes about Maine and stuff like that, he does about sort of rural small towns. And it's really good. I liked it. There is a suggestion of like, oh wait, maybe is there some actual magic in this tarot deck? And is there, you know, some reason why it may have passed on to the daughter? Knowing Lemire, it's not going to be something so straightforward as that. But it's a good kickoff. Like, I really liked it.
Yeah. Well, I think I tend to like Lemire stuff that he draws himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what was the last thing he did? The
weird bug monster thing.
Yeah. What's it called?
Fish flies.
That was so gross.
We all like fish flies.
Fish flies was good.
And then Royal City. Those are my favorite things. And so this is definitely.
He is a quirky artist, but really good.
Yeah.
You know what he's almost like? I feel like if Tim Sale had been like an indie artist and never done superheroes, he kind of would have looked a little like
that. Did he get announced that he's doing the Absolute Flash?
Who's that?
Jeff Lemire.
I could see that.
Possible. Although, again, that's one where he probably won't be doing the art, and it'll probably be I like his superhero stuff a little less.
I agree.
Although Black Hammer was pretty dope.
Black Hammer was dope. Yeah, that's true. He didn't do the art on that one.
That's true.
Somebody did the art like him, though.
But there was actually a bunch of different artists on the various series, and I thought a lot of them were really good.
They were.
There is a new Conan book called Battle of the Black Stone. I think this is just kind of a tie-in. It's same writer, Jim Zub. But it looks like there's, do I see, what's his name, the Puritan guy in there?
Oh, Solomon?
Yeah.
I did see that there's like something that looks like almost more like 18th century or something in it.
Yeah, there's also
sure if it was one of those weird things where somebody is like reading from the Chronicles.
I believe that may be what it is, because it seems like there's some like 1930s guys in here too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Farscape gets a 25th anniversary special, original stories. Including the writer O'Banion, what's his name? Rodney S. O'Banion. Doing an introduction, and then there's
Was he like the creator of Farscape?
Yes.
And now he worked on Evil.
He worked on Evil.
Yeah.
But yeah, four different stories. If you are a fan of Farscape and we need some more of those characters, it's in here. New book from Cullen Bunn and Christopher Mitten called The Autumn Kingdom.
I thought this was a really good first
issue. Is this a fantasy book?
It's about a writer who has written like a successful series of fantasy books.
Okay.
But there may be something a little bit more feeding into the real world as he takes his family on a vacation, a working vacation.
Okay.
It was a really good first issue, had some heart. Bunn is pretty good at doing concise stories well, so I think this is another really good one from him.
Nice. Dark Horse has another of their. It was a digital first book, Duck and Cover. This is Scott Snyder and artist Raphael Albuquerque. Nick, did you read through this one?
I did not get.
I have
chance.
Read through this one.
What do you think?
I think it's pretty good. It also has a little bit of the Stephen King vibe of like when he does flashbacks to like the 50s or 60s, like in It or Stand By Me. This is kids who are like elementary school kids. Maybe high school. I think it's like youngest is like a freshman, but there's a few that are like probably seniors.
Yeah.
And there's an odd mix of like. So there's a nerdy African American kid who kind of is a wannabe filmmaker, and his dad, like, who's the high school janitor, I think, saved up money for a month to buy him like a little handheld camera, kind of like
Spielberg had. Oh, that's right. He's making some of this. He's making movies.
Whatever. What was that movie that J.J. Abrams did? Super 8. So there's a little bit of that Super 8 vibe to it early on. But it assembles a cast of characters. Like, there's like this kind of jerky bully guy. There's this older chick who's actually part of like a kind of a like a hot rod gang that have actually been causing problems around the town. And things all kind of come to a head. And there's a weird suggestion that like... They're, while it's all happening, the duck and cover is a reference to that old duck and cover nuclear cartoon to protect yourself that they terrified children with in the 50s. And only it seems like it may actually have come to pass, but there's stuff in it that looks almost like alien stuff. So I don't know if this is like a dream world sequence, if there is some sort of... something happens near the end, and I'm not quite sure what it was. But like... kids from these various different walks, some of them are friends, some of them are enemies, some of them are frenemies, but there's about four or five main kids in this town that are the heart of our story, and it does have a little bit of a Losers Club vibe like it. And
I'm flipping through it. It looks really cool. It's like maybe has some time travel involved, or I don't know. There's some really cool visuals, but I expect that from Rafael Albuquerque.
I mean, yeah, for sure. So, if any of that stuff, whether you are a Scott Snyder, you know, it is the reteaming of him with the artist of American Vampire.
Yep.
So if you'd like to see that crew again, if you like some of that Stephen King kids on bike stuff,
yep.
Or just the weird 50s nostalgia and paranoia stuff interests you, check it out.
Lady Mechanica, the sort of steampunk book over at Image, gets a new miniseries.
How long has Joe Benito been doing?
For a while. There were like four or five volumes.
Oh, there was more than that, I think. There was like, I think, six or eight if you add them all up.
I feel like it's jumped to various publishers
For sure.
Like 80 different publishers. But I'll say this, where everyone else just kind of does like a little steampunk story here and there, he has stayed true to the genre.
Yep.
And isn't has this, not abandoned it.
Isn't this kind of a steampunk meets Tomb Raider kind of thing?
I
feel like my thought when it debuted was like it looked like a Top Cow bad girl comic. Yeah. I think it came out of Top Cow.
Yeah.
I remember reading a few issues and finding it better than I expected to be, and actually it wasn't as nearly as TNA-ish as it looked.
Yeah.
So my disappointment.
Yeah, it's got some pulp adventure to it as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the ninth miniseries of Lady Mechanica.
And I believe they're all meant to be, you know, you could walk in anytime and check out her adventures if you're like, where are all the steampunk books at? Because it is kind of weird. There's not many steampunk books.
Yep. Ultimates number 4. This is the origin of the MCU's Doctor Doom. The writer very cleverly, when Robert Downey Jr. was announced as playing Doom, he was like, the next issue of Ultimates will explain all of this. Now, it has nothing to do with it.
I take that back. There is something to do a person being turned into Doom.
Yes,
so.
But it's Reed Richards. It's not Tony Stark.
But, true.
But do we think it's possible that that may suggest that there's some weird machinations by the maker?
No, I believe this is Denise Kemp taking advantage of a really big splash to like, hey, read my book. Which more power to him.
I've actually been enjoying the Ultimates quite a bit. So.
This feels a little Warren Ellison to me. It's a little too dark. The world is ruined.
Well, the last issue was pretty dark too.
I know. And that's the thing I'm discovering is like, I guess I don't want to read a book about. I know that this is what the whole thing was. The maker did. But I'm like, I'd rather read about the other half of that. Like when they come back and restore themselves. Yeah. And we're very much wallowing in the look how terrible everything is. But if that is your speed. It's well done for that. Just not my speed.
Marvel Elseworlds, I like them sometimes.
Get Fury number 5, speaking of dark, the Vietnam-era Fury Punisher Max book.
Right.
Gets its penultimate issue number 5. Absolute Power, also speaking of dark, this is the 4-issue miniseries. It's also the penultimate issue.
This has Superman in it. How can it be dark?
Well,
Is it because Superman got his towers taken away and got shot?
It's Mark Waid and Dan Mora, so the art is great. The writing's pretty good. It is... This is the...
Randy, at some point, you were like, I never want to see this in front of my face again.
I hated the
but
first
you
issue.
Have been liking elements of it.
Yes, I know
that you're not at all totally on board, but you've been liking elements of the last issue or two.
Would you like it in the same way I like the Deadpool movies? I don't want to like it, but it's pretty well executed.
Would you like it better if Amanda Waller wasn't the villain?
Absolutely, 100%. That is 50% of why I dislike it, at least. But if you're... it's got Dan Moore artwork, and it's Mark Waid writing, and it's going to lead into the absolute universe at DC.
How many more issues are left?
One more.
Okay.
Yeah. We get the second issue of Flash Gordon. We all like that Flash Gordon issue.
I don't think any of us have had a chance to read this yet, right?
This, yeah.
But it was a very fun first issue, so I'm looking forward to round two.
The fourth and penultimate issue of the Scarlet miniseries.
Yep. This is a pretty big action-heavy issue.
Lots of ninjas.
Yep.
I was hoping to have my theory confirmed or denied, and it looks like I'm going to have to wait at least one more issue for it.
Mm-hmm. I think your theory is solid, though.
I mean, it's weird to me if it's not my theory. We'll be back.
Another issue of Cruel Universe, the EC Comics science fiction one. I like the first issue better than the horror one. So
still an anthology format, like three stories per.
Yeah. Nice art. I'm curious to see it.
Yep.
Nick and I are single issues.
The second issue of Blood Brothers Mother, the Azrael and Rizzo book.
That's like a distillery book, right?
It is. But I think that's the only one I have that you didn't mention.
Okay. Dave, anything I missed?
Let's see. The only oddball thing I wanted to mention was I kind of fell off keeping up with Immortal Thor. But I was randomly reading through this just for, like, only one scene. There was some big cosmic stuff going on that I didn't care about. But there's an extended conversation between the Enchantress and Thor where they're both treated fairly maturely and kind of acknowledge their contentious battles over the years and occasional, I think, affairs. And it's... I guess she had a son that appeared in Strange Academy. Do y'all know about this?
Mm-mm.
But he died in that, and Thor bears some responsibility for it, or at least he feels he does.
Hmm.
Not that he was directly involved, but it was almost like I was all father, and this something happened on his watch.
Right.
And I was just like, this is such a good little center of the book. I think I will check out some more of Al Ewing stuff in trade paperback, even though some of it was a little bit too cosmic-y for me at times.
I'll say I really like the cover. It's very cool.
What's his name? Alex Ross has been doing some great Kirby-type covers, homage covers.
Okay.
But, just wanted to throw that out there for, like, doing some interesting stuff.
We've got a lot of graphic novels this week. I'm not going to mention all of them. There's a ton of graphic novels. And there's a bunch of little golden books.
Like, there's probably literally, like, 30 of them this
at
week.
At least. But among them is this book called Under the Oak Tree, the comic. So this is based on the most popular webcomic on Manta. It's going to be kind of like Lore Olympus kind of thing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So it is based on the stuttering Lady Maximilian is forced to marry Sir Ritan, a lowborn knight caught in one of her father's schemes. And their relationship sort of sours. He leaves for war. And 3 years later, he comes back. He's a war hero, and they've got to sort of build their relationship together. So it's kind of like a mixed romance kind of thing. But it sounds interesting.
The production looks amazing on that.
It's very, very pretty. And like I say, super popular webcomic, kind of like Lore Olympus. The first four people who buy it will get a nice pin to go with it.
This is a random one that I saw on the shelf, and I believe it's just a reprint, but it may have some new material. On the super serious side of things is Palestine by Joe Sacco,
mm-hmm.
who kind of is a comics journalist.
Yep.
Like, he literally does journalism through his comics art. He's kind of comes from underground comic schools. And obviously this has been all over the news for the last year or two and for the last also many decades.
Yep.
And if you just want to get more of a handle on it and, you know, doing a little bit of learning the comics way, I've read enough of this one to recommend it if you want to get some insight into it. That's from somebody who was there. So,
all right, that wraps up. So, if we have some trailers, we can just skip to next week where we record a little late.
Sure,
we'll do trailers next week. So, we'll just wrap it up there. We'll be back next week. And until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.